Today on Light on the Hill, we're learning how to walk away from anxiety and arrive at God's perfect peace.
I have found that peace only comes from you. I have found that joy only comes from you. 'Cause all I need is you.
As Christians, we're in a fierce battle, and the world is getting more wicked by the minute. We also look at what has happened recently in the political realm and the coronavirus pandemic, and a lot of people are on edge and so anxious as a result. But God doesn't want you to live that way. So today on Light on the Hill, Pastor James Cadiz takes us to Matthew chapter 6 and shows us how to walk away from that fear and anxiety. I think you're going to be greatly encouraged as you listen in.
Well, I thought it would be appropriate to be in Matthew chapter 6 today because there is a lot of anxiety and there is a lot of fear right now in our nation, and I'm seeing it happening more and more and more. I think that what happens is, and there is a real spiritual principle behind this. There's a truth here that I think all of us need to grasp and understand, and that is when we begin to see a rise in evil, when we begin to see an increase of tolerance for evil things in a nation, what ends up happening is we begin to see the rise of more anxiety and the rise of more fear. And the reason why is because when we make a decision as a nation that we are not going to put the things of God at the front, when we make a decision as a nation that we are not going to pay any attention or mind to what God has to say concerning His word and the other things that we need to be vested in to make a nation grow and prosper, then oftentimes we find ourselves in a position where we capitulate to the sense and the nuances that create the condition of fear, hatred, evil, all of those things. And our desire, when we seek the Lord, is to look to Him and to understand what it is that we're looking at, right? We understand that the nation that we're in right now, we must pray for, because if we allow things to continue in the direction it's going, its heart for God is going to be lost, right? We live in a nation right now where people are rewriting history and telling us things that never really did happen. They're making accusations that are completely false. And they are getting to the point where, because of wicked and tyrannical leadership, we are even being forced to being fearful of doing the type of things that God has called us to do throughout the ages. Worshiping Him, gathering together in His name, so on and so forth. And those are the types of things that we need to be very, very mindful of, and understanding that during a time like this, where things are getting dark, where the days are getting darker, where things are getting worse, we need to, for all intents and purposes, hone down even closer and further into the Word of God. We need to be the type of people that are watching what God says concerning these matters and concerning these issues, that our minds and our hearts will be intact towards Him. Now, the best way that I can give you this illustration is the fact that we're in a battle right now. The battle is significant, right? The battle is not just what's happening with the nation, although it's a huge, huge indicator of the real battle that's going on, right? The battle is very spiritual. Right? The Bible tells us this. The Bible tells us that the wrestling match, the proverbial wrestling match that we're in every day, has nothing to do with the physical contact we make with one another. It has everything to do with that which is spiritual, right? There is a spiritual warfare that's happening. The wrestling that we do is very spiritual. What is happening in the visible is a very deep reflection of that which is happening in the invisible. We know that. And so if we understand that the warfare that we are fighting is spiritual, if we understand that the battle that we are in is serious and that it's real and that it's significant and that it has ramifications far beyond anything we can possibly imagine in the physical realm, then we need to have calm and level heads as we fight the battle that we're in, because the battle is raging. And the number one thing that we need to have in a raging battle, in a battle where there's mortar fire going over everywhere, where there's rounds being shot, where things are happening, where all the proverbial nonsense is taking place, we need to have a very clear presence of mind. We need to be able to see things with the kind of clarity that very few people actually have. I can give you an example of this. And let me just say this before I do give you that example. When we begin to develop the mindset of anxiety and panic, when we get to the place where we are just out of our minds and, oh my God, and we're doing all that stuff, we're allowing our hearts to wander away and we allow fear to control us, and we get to that place where the level of anxiety in which we have increases so high, so tremendously, that we lose control and even lose our own way of thinking, our thought process, our minds, our hearts, you know what begins to take place? We begin to put ourselves in the position to cause injury and harm spiritually. We allow ourselves to jump in a hole that will be so bottomless that by the time we get to the bottom, we won't even know what's in front of us or behind us or on top of us or below us, because we've allowed the confusion, the anxiety, all of the emotions that come with that to overwhelm our world instead of allowing the perfect peace of God, which passes all understanding, to rule our hearts and cause us to be in that position where we are best slated to be able to fight the battle that God has put in front of us. That's such an important principle, you guys. It's a very, very important principle. I remember this very interesting story. One of the very first times I started working at the police department, I was working a patrol shift at night. I remember it was very, very late at night. And it was, I think I want to say 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. And all of a sudden I hear one of the officers get on the radio and go, "Wah!" Like literally all I could hear was screaming. It just sounded like a guy was screaming on the radio, you know? And I'm like, "What's going on?" And one of the guys that I'm with, who's a pretty experienced guy, he says, "Oh, that's just so-and-so. He needs help." And was very calm about it. I'm like, "Bro, he sounds like he's dying." He goes, "Yeah, he always does. He panics and he starts screaming. Everybody knows it's him. They don't even have to listen for the voice. They just know it's him." So it takes a dispatcher a while to find out where he is because he's so busy screaming, you know? And then we finally get over there and sometimes a shirt is ripped off of him and he's in a pretty good fight. He's bruised up or whatever. But we get there and most of the time safely and we got lights and sirens going and he's calmly telling me about this. One of the very first times I was ever in a police car. I'm like, "Wow. Crazy, you're a little calm. It's weird, man. Like somebody gave you downers or something. You're not like me. My heart's beating. I'm like, man, where is this guy? Let's go find him. Let's get him some help." Wah! 6 years later. By the way, at the end of that whole call, he says, "Yeah, man, you just got to be calm when these things happen." I told him, in my mind, that first time, like, that guy is whatever. He won't stay calm the first time something crazy happens. The guy's been on the force for 20 years. I remember the first time I heard a really crazy incident go down with him, how calm he was. Okay, well, you know, I don't know. Maybe if it's a really bad situation, he'll get crazy. So I'm on the phone with him. He's a motor police officer, right? So I don't get to get in a police car with him a whole lot. And he loved Starbucks coffee. And so I'm on my way over and I go, "Bro, I'm in the Starbucks line to get you a, you know, whatever." He liked a latte. "I'll get you your latte, bro." He goes, "Oh, great." He goes, "Hey, a quick question. How does this sound? What do you mean, your phone?" He goes, "Yeah, I'm using this new technology in my helmet. It's called Bluetooth. You ever heard of that?" And I go, "Yeah, it's been around for like 6 months. Yeah, you know." "Oh, yeah, it's really, really cool." And then he says, "Hold on, bro, hold on." Now, mind you, I'm not even a half a mile away from him. I'm probably a quarter mile away from him. I'm in line. I got a vehicle in front of me, a vehicle behind me. My window's rolled down. I'm on the phone with him. And in the background, after he says, "Hold on," I hear him with his voice, "Drop the gun, drop the gun, police, drop the gun." And out of the vehicle, as I'm listening, I hear pop, 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 pop. Rounds have been shot. And this guy, I thought for sure he wasn't even going to answer me back. Then I hear him in my phone, I hear them on the phone, and I have the police radio on, so they're echoing at the same time. Roll unit side, got a subject over here, set up the containment, and I'm thinking, okay, he's too busy, I can't do anything. So I tell him when there's a pause, I say, "Hey, bro," I said, "I'm gone, I'm sorry, I'll go, you take care of your thing, you know, this is going to be a long." He goes, cursed at me, "Blankety blank, no, you better order 3 cups of coffee, because I'm going to be here for a long time." He still has a guy at gunpoint. He's got his Bluetooth headphone on. And I know he didn't kill the kid because he's telling the kid, "Don't move, or you're going to take another round, don't move." gun is probably 2 feet away from the officer's foot at the time that all of this is happening. I found this out later. He tells me on the phone, hey, hold on, bro, just 1 second. I got to finish this containment. Yeah, 26, I want him over here. North End, yeah, cover this guy. Get a unit over. Do I have a, yeah. One guy actually starts screaming, same guy that we've always talked about. I'm like, where are you? And he tells the guy, stop screaming, bro. Let me talk over you. And he does a better job than the dispatcher coordinating the whole perimeter, the whole deal, and then finishes coordinating everything, gets back on the phone, and curses at me and says, where the blank are you? Where's your, where's my coffee? A minute later, I'm right there. He's happy as could be. He's got a kid in handcuffs. You've got the shoot team is already over there. I mean, it's a big old mess. And I'm in the containment talking to him like it's no big deal. To say the least, I've been in 5 or 6 situations like that. And what's amazing to me, him and there's other police officers like this, astounding as he was calm through the whole thing. It was very obvious he knew exactly what he was doing. This is a guy who got in an officer-involved shooting under very legitimate circumstances. The kid was armed and made an attempt at his life. And he's having a conversation with me on the phone asking me to go get my coffee. That's what happens when you've been exposed to warfare like that, right? That's what happens when you've been in the midst of it for a long time. You're used to the rounds being fired. You're used to the craziness going around you, but your relationship with God is so strong. It's so solid. It's so well-founded that you're not allowing the outside influences to affect you. And I've seen many people like that, the kind of people that people are very scared of. Guys that I've seen just, I mean, it's amazing how calm they are in situations where they could very, very easily lose their lives. Here's the reason why. Because first of all, they've got great training. They have a lot of background. They have a lot of experience. But they know, based on their experience, where the next step is going to be. They know exactly how they have to be in order to handle the situation. Now, let's just assume that he lost his mind and, I might be telling you the story of his funeral. I might have told you the story of how he died. By the way, when all of this happened, he didn't have enough time to even get off his motorcycle. He was on the phone with me, handling that weapon in his hand while his motorcycle was still in forward motion. Because when he turned the street, there was the armed suspect pointing the gun at him, getting ready to shoot. No joke. We're in that place right now, ladies and gentlemen. We're in that place. We're on our motorcycles. We're turning the corner. The enemy is on the other side. He's getting ready to shoot. He's fired off several rounds. And some of us can react one of two different ways, right? We can turn around and take off and say, I don't want any of this. Let's leave, which eventually will get you dead. The other way is you can panic and scream, which will very likely get you injured, if not potentially dead, because you've allowed the fear to control the way you act and react and the anxiety. Or you can just go through it calmly, methodically, and well-equipped. Because you know exactly what's in front of you. Because you have a creator and a maker who has told you what the overall outcome is going to be, right? See, this is the interesting part about the warfare that we engage in. There's a lot of people that say, oh, we're going to get raptured and God's going to come for the church. So why do we get involved in any of this stuff anyway? Well, that's baloney, right? Knowing that God is going to come back for his church and knowing that that could be at any minute, knowing that that could be at any moment is the very thing that emboldens us in the engagement of this warfare, right? We engage in the warfare and we say, okay, I know God is with me. I know how this thing ends, so I've got nothing to worry about. That's the whole idea, right? That we move forward and we continue this engagement process. So Jesus brings all of this up. He talks about this. By the way, I said that we would start in verse 25, but before we do, let me give you a little bit of background on what Jesus is saying here. Let's start a little earlier in this chapter where he says in verse 19, lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth where moth and rust doth corrupt and where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through nor steal. Then he makes this very interesting comment. He says, For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. So this is what he's basically saying. Don't make earthly gain your priority. Now, if you're sitting here and you're very wealthy, praise the Lord. God's blessed you with the responsibility. Take that responsibility seriously, right? If you're in a job situation or you own a business and you're working hard to obtain wealth, by all means, keep doing it. Do what God's called you to do. Nothing wrong with that. But can I just make you one simple promise that you should never walk away from, and that's this. You could lose it all overnight. It can be taken in just 1 second. You could be a person who's worth $100 million. Your net worth could be $100 million, and you could lose it in one foul swoop. Overnight, it could be gone. Well, it's impossible for $100 million to be taken away from me overnight. What if your life's taken away from you overnight? That's a pretty easy way to be separated from your $100 million, isn't it? See what I'm saying? It's one way or the other. If you don't think that kind of money can be taken away from you so quickly, talk to the hundreds of thousands of people who have won sums very close to that, who were lottery winners and lost it all within the first year. It's very, very easy to do. What Jesus here is saying is, don't make those things your priority. Building your wealth, it doesn't mean anything. I've talked to you guys about this, you men especially. We've talked about this on multiple occasions. You're working hard to minister to your family. You're working hard to minister to your wives, to your children. You want to bring a good income for them. You want to have a good job. Do not ever teach them that your job gets priority over what you do at work, right? Or what you do at church. It doesn't get priority. You know how many times we see people in church and say, oh, well, I'm going to skip out on church today because I have to work some overtime. Or I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that. Now, listen, don't get me wrong. There are some exceptions to this rule, right? There are some situations where there are doctors, police officers that get called in. That, you know, there's things that they really can't control, right? But for the average line of work, you'd be really surprised with how much of your hourly circumstances you can actually control. I used to watch my father do this on a regular basis. My father, under no circumstances when we were children, would allow his job to interfere with the responsibilities that he had to his children. He was always the one that drove his children to church, not his wife. He was the one that drove his children to church and led his children, not his wife, not my mom. He took that responsibility. Why? Because that's where his heart was. That's where his treasure was. The real treasure that he had was the kingdom. It was the things that were important. It was the what's going to happen to the heart of my children. What's going to happen to the heart of my wife, my own heart. People that know that, by the way, are the same people that recognize that every dime they have to their name is given to them by who? The Lord, right? The Lord is the one that does it. Now, why would I read this first? I would read this first because this oftentimes is the driving force and mechanism that contributes to the anxiety people have. But a lot of people are scared of losing their jobs. A lot of people are scared of more economic shutdowns because of what's going on. A lot of people are really, really scared about, you know, having to do things that is going to cause their livelihood to be completely lost. I mean, so many businesses have been taken away. So many things have happened that are just really, really bad. A lot of reason to be anxious, right? Oh, my job, I don't know what's going to happen, and I got to put food on the table for my family. And I can't even get a bailout because all these people are so busy fighting over that. How's it all going to work? Well, Jesus says, look, don't make that your priority. Make your treasure worshiping me. Make that literally invest in the kingdom of God. Don't invest in worldly things. Now, again, this is not a prohibition on being wise with your money. This is not a prohibition of working extra hard, do well with your business. And it's not speaking against any of that stuff. But what it is saying is, where is the core of your heart? Where does it center? It should center on the things of God. Now, knowing that, and knowing that that should be your priority, knowing that if your desire is to serve God, knowing what he says in verse 24, he says, no man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve what? God and mammon. What does that mean? You can't serve God and money. really, that's really what he's saying. You can't serve God and the love of attainment of money or treasures or wealth or riches. You're going to serve one or the other. Which one are you going to serve? By the way, can I just tell you, every single time I've made the choice to serve God over money, God has blessed me with more money I ever thought I could get by walking away from him. Oh man, but I could make just a few extra dollars by doing this. No, I'm going to put the Lord first. I'm going to make him my priority. And then in doing so, God puts in your hand way more than you ever thought you could. I'm not saying that he's going to give you a bunch of money if you just, you know, do what he says. But what I'm simply saying is that doing it God's way always pays off. And I'll take it as far as to say, what if you didn't make an extra dollar, not one single extra dollar, putting your life in God's hands completely and serving him wholeheartedly and doing the things that God has asked you to do? Is it worth it to be at the end of your life like the guy who had all the money in the world saying, I wish I spent more time with my family, I wish I served God more, when he's on his deathbed? Or do you want to be the guy that is on his deathbed and has his whole family surrounding him, saying, I thank God you invested in me. I thank God you were with me. I thank God you were the dad that was with me or the mom that was with me. I thank God that you supported me. Which one would you rather be, right? None of those things are going to eventually matter. If your priority is the money that you want to make and put in your pocket, you're really not serving God, because you can't serve two masters. One is going to rule over you. One or the other is going to rule over you. Which one are you going to allow to rule over you? Is it going to be money or is it going to be God? Now, once we've established the need to put God first in everything that we do, this is precisely how we walk away from anxiety. Follow me and follow me good, guys. Everybody thinks when we get into chapter 6, verse 25, that what Jesus is really talking about here is food and clothing. He's not. The reason why Jesus brings up food and clothing and shelter, the reason why he brings those up is because those are the core of man's needs. Physically. In other words, it is the number one thing that man will contend for at all costs, right? If I tell you to come and hang out with me and we'll have a burger, be there at 5 o'clock. Sometimes you'll be there at 5:30, 5:15. You're not going to be the stickler for being on time, because is there really truly a consequence for you being late? No, you just pick up the phone and tell your friend you're going to be late, right? Not all that big of a deal. But if the employer who says, I'll fire you if you don't show up on time, asks you to come at 5 o'clock, every single one of you will be there at 4:45, won't you? You'll all be there earlier. You want to know why? Because you understand that the consequence to your actions will put you in a situation where you don't have the food, the shelter, and the clothing that you need to put on your own back, cover yourself, and feed yourself and your family. So what will you do? You'll be there every single time. Why? Because it is the core need represented to the human physical body. Human beings need this at the core. It's the most important thing to them. So Jesus is using that as an example. Here's the idea behind what Jesus is saying. If I can provide for your core needs, then I can provide for any need.
We're learning what to do when anxiety and fear has consumed us today on Light on the Hill. Pastor James Cadiz will be right back. Maybe this is just what you are struggling with. Go ahead and visit our website to hear this study again at lightonthehillradio.com. We'd also like to pray for you. The Bible encourages us to cast all our cares on the Lord, for he cares for us. Email your requests when you visit lightonthehillradio.com. We have so much to be thankful for here at Light on the Hill. God has been so good to us, and we've been amazed at how he's provided so faithfully, even through this pandemic. If you'd like to make a contribution, you can visit lightonthehillradio.com. You can also give through our Light on the Hill app or call 562-804-5509. Here's Pastor James with some concluding thoughts.
So for those of you who might be looking at this and saying, well, why is James going to do a Bible study on anxiety in a passage like Matthew? Because every principle that's taught to you here in Matthew chapter 6 is specifically designed to permeate in every part of your life. It doesn't just apply to your livelihood. It doesn't just apply to your job. It doesn't just apply to what you eat or what you're going to drink. It doesn't just apply to the clothing that you wear. It doesn't apply to the house. It applies to every aspect of your life. It literally applies to your marriage. It applies to your children. It applies to your living situation. It applies to the nation that you're called by God to contend for. It applies to every aspect of what it is that we are dealing with. Folks, make no mistake about it. Jesus is making it very clear to us that the obligation that rests within us is to trust Him and let Him handle the rest.
That's all for today. And remember, you are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden.
I have found that peace only comes from You. I have found that joy only comes from You. 'Cause all I need is